chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you wanna holler, holly-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Grape wine in a mason jar, homemade and brought to school by a friend of mine after class. Me and him and this other fool decide that we'll drink up what's left. Chug-a-lug, so help thyself. First time for everything, my ears still ring. Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you wanna holler, holly-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, 4-H and a FFA. On a field trip to the farm, me and a friend sneak off behind this big old barn where we uncovered a covered up moonshine still. And we thought we'd drink our fill, and I swallowed it with a smile. I run 10 miles, chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you wanna holler, holly-ho. Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, jukebox and sawdust floor. Something like I ain't never seen. Heck, I'm just going on 15. But with the help of my finagling uncle, I get snuck in. For my first taste of sin, I said, let me have a big old sip. Right on a double backflip. Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you wanna holler, holler.
By the way, don't forget to go by and see Burford and tell him old Road Hog sent you. Everybody that's ever been there's had a close shave. All right, then.
There's my good old buddy Roger Miller. Remember him from King of the Road? That good music, yeah. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker on the 7th of May. Time slides by real quick around here. 7th of May 2014 on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. We always dedicate Wednesday to David Lane. That's right. Well, I decided to start putting a message back on the bunker phone here because we get a lot of people and then they get lazy and don't dial up the other number. And I think we'll put a short message on the bunker phone, and if I'm around, I can still pick it up and talk to you. How about that? I'm talking about that Jew boy, that kosher boy basketball owner out there, the Clipper owner today. So if you want to call in and hear my take on that, that story is starting to get a little old, but I think you'll enjoy my little statement. And we're still at P.O. Box 401. They haven't kicked us out yet. No, the ADL's tried, but they can't. Anyhow, we're still there, and that's P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, world-renowned address, and, of course, the intergalactical address of our big website is resist.com. And, man, you can get a college education. You can get a lot better than a Harvard education, a lot better than old Obomsky got, yeah, just by spending a lot of time in the halls of wisdom, resist.com. And if you ever have any problems on orders or anything like that, or possibly your donations, you contact merchandiseresist@yahoo.com. And if she can't straighten it out, well, come on back to me and I'll help you too. Okay, so should be no reason not to. Don't forget now, if you send in an extra $5 on your 20, you'll get the password to our new historical archive, which we're just beginning to load up. And I think you're going to find some very interesting things, because we got tapes and videotapes that we can take audio off of, and I've got cassette tapes. I got cases and cases of cassette tapes. I don't even know what the hell is all on there, but I'm telling you, there's some real historical stuff, a lot of people from the past that you haven't heard from for quite a while, so you might want to add that extra $5 in there to get that password. And don't forget, you need to get your donations for the show in by the 15th. That's the date we'd like to set, and you'll get your, if you get your donations in by the 15th, we send you out your password and all that kind of good stuff. So anyhow, let's get on with the show here. You know, I never realized how racist these the ruling class could be, but they, when it comes to their form of racism, they're really excellent. You know, this deal of loading China up with all this filthy producing manufacturing and slave labor and all this burning more coal than any than all the other countries in the world combined, and dumping everything in the rivers, and all the poor peasants leaving their little plot of land where they can at least raise some food, running into the city. And now people are committing suicide, both working class and upper class, in the Communist Party, the Capitalist Communist Party. That's interesting. So it looks like the ruling class has decided to kill two birds with one stone. That's make billions of dollars off of their deals in China, and also lay the foundation for exterminating half of the people of China. What do you think of that? Maybe those boys really stay up late at night figuring this stuff out, man. Well, we had a big election around here yesterday, and it was mostly it was about judges. Yeah, there must be some pretty good extra money in that judging, because it the money they spent running for those judges slot, they don't make that much money, you know. And so there's other, when you're a judge, that allows you many ways to make money, you know, real estate deals, you name it. You got the inside thing, you know. You go down to the golf course and you play golf with these other people, government people and business people, and you get the inside word, man. I used to know a doctor who used to play golf around here that even when I was a kid, that he used to carry about $3,000 in cash in his golf bag. And out there in the privacy of the golf course, way out there where nobody's listening, that's where he made all his deals, man. Well, anyhow, they what's interesting, we have a guy that was a real conservative type, you know, and some of the stuff he said I agree with. However, I didn't pay hardly any attention to the election. But anyhow, we had a state representative in here by the name of Kabaki, who happened, get this, she's a Mexican that came in here years ago with the tomato pickers or whatever, and she got in the pants of this banker that owned a big bank here in town, and he married her, and of course, with his money, she was able to manipulate her, win an election, one term, the way it looks, as state representative. But she got her ass beat real good, not on issues that are of real importance, but the Christian issue of safeguarding marriage. You know, all these Christians are all excited about that, and she evidently didn't come out strong for that. And so the other guy beat the hell out of her. And but what's funny about it to me, I mean, divorce is so rampant, not only here but all over the United States, and yet these people get fanatical over this defense of marriage bill. And I think that was the thing that really defeated this Kabaki woman. I talked to her one time. She wasn't a bad person to talk to. She listened to what I had to say about what I was talking about. But anyhow, so I tell you, you got it. You got it. In fact, I was listening to the radio this morning, and they have these religious stations all over the dial. I'm thinking all over the dial. And this one guy, I just happened to tune this in, and the guy was talking about having the fellow that won this election I'm talking about on the radio yesterday. And the guy, the moderator, said, yeah, and we both prayed for Mrs. Kabaki. Not that she'd win the race, but to pray for her soul, because she wasn't really into the Jesus thing enough. She's probably into the Jesus thing, but not enough for these fundamentalists around here. So anyhow, that's, you know, I guess he's praying for her so she don't have to spend eternity in the lake of fire. Maybe that was it. Now, I told you, I think, about a week ago about this site, and I think we all should have it bookmarked into our computers. It's called openthebooks.com. And you can go in there and find out where all the money's going. Now, these guys up there in North Dakota said they don't want any white separatists up there in North Dakota. What a bunch of hypocrites. The state is 99% white. That is, we don't want any of those white people. Anyhow, so they're going on and on about that. They said, well, when these guys come into the state like that Craig Cobb, we're ready for them this time. We'll be shining the light of day on them. Well, I sent out a letter to the Bismarck Tribune, said, look, we'll take that challenge, but don't mind us if we dig up all the corruption of the politicians in your state and expose it to the world, because it's out there. All these politicians in North Dakota being bought off by the oil industry, everything, and bought off by these oily people that want to build the big pipelines through and have all the big oil train tankers careening through their state, upsetting, burning, blowing up, and all that kind of stuff, and making deals with all these gas companies to frack the hell out of North Dakota. And if you've seen some of the areas like out in Colorado where they have been fracking, they tear the land up, it looks like crap. And then these people, after they get all the gas they want, they leave and just leave everything lay. They don't clean up anything. And so I'm sure we can find a few good old boys there in North Dakota. We can say, okay, you're going to expose old terrible Tommy coming into North Dakota? Well, we'll expose you. Bend over, boy. Always remember, the best defense is a good attack. Always. Yeah. Sometimes you have to retreat a little, but that's not giving up. But most of the time, the best defense is an attack. I sent this out to you, that this Leith, North Dakota mayor, a mayor of 20 people, I mean, that's funnier than hell, with dirt streets and it's barely a spot in the road. But he said how he wanted Craig Cobb to get 4 years in the prison. You know, a lot of times I have enemies, but I don't really like to see anybody go into a prison, because if you don't know what prison's like, you shouldn't be wishing it on anybody. And so, but anyhow, he was saying that he wished Craig Cobb would have got 4 years in the pen. Well, I came back and sent out a note to him, said, well, there's only one thing worse than that, is the mayor of Leith is going to be required to stay in Leith for the rest of his life, and that's worse than any prison. And he's probably trapped there with a woman he can't stand and some snot-nosed kids he can't stand. but he's got one thing. He got the nigger neighbor, the one nigger neighbor, his pet. You know, the Labor Department's one of the biggest lying outfits in Washington. I don't know. They're all liars, but the Labor Department lies all the time, because they put out figures now that there's all these jobs that they've added, hundreds of thousands of jobs, which is just not true, you know, unless they're talking about some kind of totally part-time job that doesn't even pay minimum wage. But one of the things they don't include on the unemployed list is all the people who have quit looking for a job. I mean, they're making it look like they found jobs. But as they drop off even trying to find a job, the Labor Department's trying to skew the figures again, like all Labor Departments do, and IRS, you name it, they all do it. But there's no way that Obomsky's going to twist this around to where these are good times. I mean, you know, it just no way it's going to happen, baby. You know, now people are raiding their 401ks and replacing home equity withdrawals as a way to make ends meet. It's been creepy to see economists and the financial media cheering the re-levering by American households as a sign that the economy is on the mend and consumers are regaining their will to shop. Well, you wouldn't know that by what you hear over in China. Their production's way down. The number of Americans who are tapping into their 401k accounts is proof that the financial health of ordinary Americans is far from robust. So you can take that to the bank. I was supposed to do a radio show. I thought it was yesterday, but it wasn't today either, with this guy by the name of John Friend. I've heard that name before. I went up on his blog site, and I saw all the usual suspects have been guests on his show. Seems like there's a regular speaking tour of about, a dozen or maybe two dozen people. And they're all trying to talk this big intellectual. We're not racist. We're racialist. No, we're not racialist. We're white nationalists. It's funny because I don't think they got many listeners because most of these shows are so unexciting that it put me to sleep. Every once in a while I'll listen to one, so I'm afraid I'm going to have to bow out of Mr. Friend's circle of friends because I made myself available 2 days in a row and he didn't show up, so I'm not going to give him the chance for the third count. Well, every other Tuesday we have the Stray Dog on here, and I got an apology to make to Stray Dog. I was sort of toning down his reverence or liking of the SS Thunderbolts. Of course, they were around a long time before there ever was a National Socialist Nazi Party. So anyhow, I forgot. I was walking around yesterday, and, this must be a sign of old age. I look down at my ring, my Viking ring that I wear all the time. I've got a wolf ring on one hand, and I've got this, I think it was a Waffen SS ring with the Viking head on it. It's got the cross, it's got the swastika rounded on a one side, and it's got the Thunderbolts on the other side. I wear it every day, wear it 24 hours a day for anybody to see, so I guess I'm fine one to talk about playing down on the Thunderbolts. I see the BNP put out a really good electioneering cartoon program, and I sent it out to you guys, passed it along to you today. And that's fine, and they did a hell of a good job on that, but you've got to have more than that kind of stuff. You've got to have teeth. Now, back when they had the National Front, and that's when I came into the picture supporting those guys in the National Front. And that's how I ran into the skinheads. But anyhow, I think that the National Front was doing a much better job than the BNP's ever done. At least, and I'm not too much for parades, but they were able to put a lot of men in the streets. And if you can put enough men in the streets that are not too belligerent but show they mean business and can protect themselves and attach that to a party, you've got something going there now. Even the Golden Dawn has made some strides that way, but I'm not close enough to the Golden Dawn to know what the top people in their party or whatever are really thinking. But I do know the National Front was doing quite well back in the, that was way back in the 80s, yeah. And but this cartoon that the BNP put out now, the BNP's become sort of a shadow group. I mean, you know, they've got no power. They're trying to get power, but the the ruling class is never going to let them have the kind of power they're going to have to save white Britain. And I was sort of amazed at speaking to a person who was actually a theoretician of racial things and Jewish things there in Britain not long ago on his on their radio show, that he said, oh yeah, we're going to do it democratically, but it's going to take us about 15 years. I said, in 15 years, all the white people that are left in Britain are going to get in rowboats and heading out, because the Caribbean will be empty of Negroes that you could move in there, because Britain is going to be totally screwed. Well, the best thing can happen right now is Scotland to divest itself from Britain, because unless the British people rise up against not only the racial exploitation, but the economic exploitation by the crooks in the city of London and all that, they don't have a chance. Now, Scotland allegedly has tremendous amounts of assets, including oil. And so, in any case like this, I tend to support dividing and seceding and breaking off, becoming smaller but more powerful. You know, it's just like an army. A lot of times you got to get rid of the riffraff and lean down your army to the to the real fighters. You know, and that's the way I did when I went into the streets in the old days. I didn't have a lot of men, but I had the kind of men I knew would watch my back and would fight all the way, no matter what it took. And so, anyhow, poor BNP, they're muddling along, but they got no teeth. They got a bulldog mascot, but I want to see that bulldog biting somebody. And also the BNP supporting these extravaganzas of shipping white troops over to the Middle East and things like that. They should be totally against that, making cannon fodder out of young white men from Britain to fight the capitalistas' wars. And so, in that sense, probably a lot of the leftists are more right than the rightists. So that's the difference. You see, we got it here too. These right-wing conservatives over here tend to be warmongers, you know. Oh, yeah, let's go. You know, when Bush invaded Iraq, most of the right-wing conservatives, oh, yeah, let's get them. Let's kill all them ragheads, you know, and which should not be our position. We got no business going over there. We don't. The capitalistas do. They have a lot of business going over there because they want the oil and everything else. But it doesn't do us any good. Look at all the guys that died over there. Now, hey, guess what? Yesterday, they've probably been there for a while. That African command, you know, they devised here a few years ago, that did have its headquarters up in Europe, but I think they've moved it into Africa now. But they sent, I don't know how many American troops they sent, but they sent them down into Nigeria to help find these girls that were kidnapped by this warlord. Now, we got about as much business being there doing that as we do sending troops to the moon. In fact, we probably got more interest sending troops to the moon. But anyhow, you can't solve those nigger problems down there. They want to kill each other. And the head nigger that's kidnapped all the girls and going to marry them to his boys, you know, well, that goes along with David Lane. They had that idea of kidnapping beautiful racial specimen girls and whisking them off to his camps in the mountains, and that little story he wrote up. But anyhow, the guy says, God told me to take all these women. See, they do that all the time. You know, God's always talking to these people. They're all around me. They're all over the world. God's talking to them all the time. I never hear that God. I said, look, invite me over when God's going to talk to you. I want to hear it, and then I want to ask him a couple of questions. But anyhow, here we're going to send probably mostly white guys, special forces or something down there, few hundred of them, to go out into the jungle and look for these nigger girls. Unfortunately, they're going to start bringing back the body bags again sooner or later. If you send them down there very much, be bringing them back like the French and the Belgiques and so forth. Did you hear that South Africa now economically has Nigeria has surpassed South Africa as South Africa slowly sinks into the cesspool? You know, none of the media are going to make much ado about this, but at one time there was no country in Africa that could come close to the power of South Africa. And now they've achieved what they wanted. They've gone down the economic rabbit hole, and to where even a country like Nigeria, who do have a lot of raw items, you know, and like that. And that's the only reason Americans or Europeans are interested in Africa. They're not interested in nation building. The Negroes can't even control a nation. They're not interested in that. They just want the goodies. You know, I'd respect them a little more if they just come out and say, we want the copper out of Nigeria, and we're just going in and get it. We ain't going in there to nation build. You know, that's the way the Chinese do. You know, they might build a railroad so they could get to what the mines where they're going to bring it out of, but they're not going there to nation build. If it helps the nation, it's an accident when the Chinese, when the Asians go into an area. So anyhow, there you go. All the corporations are saying, well, and then you got all these Christians out there. We got to help these Negroes down there. And showing you on TV every day, wouldn't you give $5 a week to keep this little baby alive? You see, they're playing at both ends of the hook, and the Christian church and the Christian church and these people and the capitalists work hand in hand. They work hand in hand. Even if they don't say the same things, the end is the same result. So they're going in there and bringing them carloads of food and everything, so they'll be feel good and copulate more, and there'll be more overpopulation and more overpopulation and more brutality and more Rwanda solutions. We won't call it the final solution. We'll call it the Rwanda solution. You know, 1 million and one day or two were murdered and hacked to pieces in that soccer stadium. That's what I call birth control. Yeah, baby. You know, I thought old Slapsy Maxi Kaiser was going to go off his rocker on his show yesterday. I listened to it. I just got to play this for you because it's funny as hell. Of course, he's supporting independence for Scotland, too, and his sidekick Tracy there. So anyhow, let's listen to this. It's hilarious.
Welcome to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Reveresco. We shall rise again. Such was the motto given by Robert the Bruce to my family, the Maxwells of Carol Laverock Castle. My family left Scotland after being forced out for financing one too many uprisings. The last one being the Jacobite uprising. Nevertheless, let's not dwell on ancient history. On the 18th of September, the Scots have the chance to vote for independence, to rise again. The media in the UK is universally against independence, including George Galloway, right here on this network. So we're going to take a look at some of the issues that matter to the other side, Stacey.
Max, first of all, I want to say this episode was... Citizen Tommy on Twitter, he and all his followers have been tweeting me nonstop for the last 6 to 8 weeks saying, you have to get him on, you have to get him on, we got him on. And lo and behold, he is at the last minute unable to attend the interview because of some marquee, which is this posh tent, some problem with the posh tent.
I think he just got cold feet, which that doesn't speak well for this movement.
Well, and another full disclosure, my family is Scottish and they all very pro independence. So with that, however, one of the issues that those who want independence from Scotland is the opposite of what George Galloway says. So George Galloway says that the reason why he's against independence is that basically England will be condemned to a future forever ruled by Tories, because it's only with a Scottish vote that basically the Tories don't control everything. Now, I saw Alan Cumming, the Scottish actor, on Bloomberg Television pro-independence, and he said, we in Scotland have never, ever had a government that represents how we vote. So they're basically condemned to either the Tories or the neoliberal New Labour. So I thought that was interesting. I hadn't ever seen it put that way, and it really inspired me to look at the policies here in England right now that they are against and what they don't want for Scotland. Royal Mail float scandal, how hedge funds cleaned up. The Royal Mail flotation scandal has deepened after officials finally admitted that hedge funds were among the priority investors sold hundreds of millions of pounds of shares. The business secretary, Vince Cable, has repeatedly insisted that the handful of key investors offered Royal Mail shares on preferential terms were long-term institutional investors. This was to ensure that the new company started with a core of high-quality investors who would be there in good times and bad. He promised to marginalize spivs and speculators.
Can I comment on Scottish independence?
Sure.
I've got a frickin' castle up there. The Maxwell clan is embedded in the history of Scotland. And, of course, we would want independence. And I don't understand Galloway's position at all. Because why would we... The point of being independent is that we don't give a flying fig what England is doing, what the UK is doing. So what, that the UK government would be forever Tory? It already is forever Tory. It's just Tony Blair is a Tory. New Labour was Tory. It's all Tory. That's what the point of being independent is, to get away from these frickin', you know, warmongering idiots. Now, as far as the economy goes, we'll take all the oil. You keep all the debt of Royal Bank of Scotland. We'll create ScotCoin, our own currency. It'll be a cryptocurrency. You can keep the British pound. Okay, as some have speculated, Dominic Frisby on this very show, given the size of Scotland and its economic potential, it could be have the highest capita per GDP in the world, higher than even Qatar. So we're rich if we get rid of these dumpties Westminster losers. Now, moving right along to the point that you just made about
the Royal Mail.
It turns out
that those 19 core investors that we were told were long-term institutional investors, well, in fact, many of them were hedge funds who sold immediately with a huge profit at the expense of the British taxpayer, which includes Scottish people and their oil, by the way. And they sold it immediately, within 48 hours, a lot of them.
Wall Street in the City of London saw Vince Cable coming a mile away. This guy had his pocket picked so horribly, you almost feel sorry for the guy. But Royal Mail was a travesty. The amount of money that they left on the table in the billions of pounds is shocking. And Vince Cable is a business idiot. He's a nincompoop. For him to come out there on television and say with a straight face that they had no idea that the market was oversubscribing this offer, even though the banks that they consulted with to give them a fair IPO price gave them an IPO price that was 50% higher than the price that they went out to the market. The fact that they allowed insiders and hedge funds to scalp the market and dump the market as shamelessly as they did shows a complete lack of respect for the British people, Vince Cable. You have shown contempt for the British people. It's not even about being incompetent. It's about being contemptuous of your constituency and your fellow British people. And there's no way in frickin'... I mean, I used to work on Wall Street myself, and I've been involved in dozens and dozens of IPOs, and I know how the game works. And I can tell you, point blank, that Vince Cable got shafted, and so did the British people.
You're going a little bit ahead, because I'm going to go into those details in a bit, but I want to remind the audience, because many people are watching around the world, they don't know who or what we're talking about, perhaps. The Royal Mail is a 498-year-old institution here in the United Kingdom. It was privatized, sold off. Now, as Vince Cable has rightly pointed out, New Labour, Peter Mandelson, and Tony Blair also wanted to privatize it. So this is that's part of their defense, is they're saying, well, the previous government also wanted to do this. The shares were launched, the IPO, at 330p. They jumped by 38% that day. Now, 20% of the shares were allocated to 16 preferred investors, had gone to hedge funds and other short-term investors, the information that has since emerged has proven. This would equate to around 150 million pounds of Royal Mail shares, 13% of the entire stock floated by the government. Now, Vince Cable argued at the time, and he argued just recently. Actually, let's look at this clip from Question Time on the 3rd of April, where he said that it was you, the pension holders out there, who benefited.
If we'd allocated it all to the very wealthy investors, then small investors would not have had anything.
The very wealthy investors were the 16 big investors.
They're not wealthy private investors.
They're much wealthier now than they were when they bought the shares.
Let me just describe who they were.
A lot of them are hedge funds.
We're talking about the Legal & General, which has hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of members. We're talking about Royal London. We're talking about classic insurance companies. We're talking about local authority pension funds. Several of them, actually, council, Labour Council, in some case, invested their funds in the Royal Mail. These are these wicked financial institutions.
What about the hedge funds?
Well, there are very few hedge funds represented. Right. The one that did buy in has actually disappeared. There's very little hedge fund activity. Most of these are long-term pension
funds. When you say disappeared, you mean cut and run?
They did, yes, actually. Yeah. The people we wanted to sell to were the serious long-term investors who have the Royal Mail's interest at heart. And they're still there. I mean, there is still a substantial majority of shares held by companies of that kind.
Yeah, well, like I said, this was extremely... there are provisions on an IPO of this nature for clawbacks in the case of a situation where there is massive mispricing. I mean, he refers to the Facebook IPO as an example of one that had problems getting through, and therefore there was a risk involved. Of course, The Facebook shareholders that got scammed by that sued and won, and they were able to claw back, and so were the exchanges. So where is the claw back for the people who got ripped off shamelessly on this IPO, number one? Number two, this is a public institution owned by the British people. It's not just some high-tech whiz bank, three or four or five-year-old enterprise. This is almost a 500-year-old enterprise. This is income-producing assets that are not going to go into the pension funds of Germans and Americans and people around the world. They're going to be benefiting from the income stream from the Royal Mail, not the British public. The British public isn't going to benefit at all from this. They have outsourced all that income to foreign countries. They get no benefit from this whatsoever.
Yeah, but also the market said they underpriced it. So that was by well over £1 billion that the taxpayer was defrauded, that they had looted from them, that they lost that. And he's pushing this notion that, well, your pension funds, long-term institutional investors own it. Well, who has pension funds anymore? But only the people who have already benefited from Margaret Thatcher's help to buy scheme when she first let out the public housing here for speculators to buy and own and speculate on and profit from. So it's only those sort of people, the 50-year-olds, the people with jobs who have pensions. A lot of people in this very unequal society do not have pensions, so their pension funds will not hold any of these profits gained by fleecing the other taxpayers.
Now they're looking back and saying, we had no idea this was going to happen, that the market is unpredictable. But the market is completely unpredictable when you're manipulating the market in this shameless manner. And, you know, Vince Cable, I just don't see how he can possibly, he should resign. He should throw himself on the sword. I mean, he says he's saying by example that because the previous Labour government did something, I'm going to do it. I mean, there's a lot of bankers committing suicide now. By that logic, should Vince Cable throw himself off a building? Does he have no mature adult ability to think for himself? Does he only just mimic something that came before him? I mean, take that big fat nursemaid tit out of your mouth that you're getting free from the state and the people and use your brain, your shameless, opportunistic idiot for these hedge funds, and you should be so embarrassed to just leave government, leave the country, get out of town. You're a shambolic idiot.
Okay, so let's go back to that Question Time thing, because the audience also were basically backing Vince Cable, this notion that he couldn't have possibly known. Nobody possibly understood what the share price would be. Here's some of the audience response.
What do you make of it, Anthony Ward? You asked the question. What's your view of it?
I think it's very easy to be wise after the event.
Absolutely.
Yes. It's notoriously difficult to predict the future values and the price that people will pay for shares. I think it was important to have a successful sale.
It really annoys me when you try to make political capital out of these kind of issues. It really does. But in terms of...
Who's making political capital?
Peter Hain. Oh. You know, he's coming out with huge hindsight.
Sure.
And, you know, where were the arguments at the time?
Again, it's totally shameless. In an era where LIBOR is manipulated. Forex manipulated. Gold markets manipulated. House markets manipulated. Every single aspect of this economy is manipulated and known ahead of time. High frequency trading scandal, totally manipulated, known ahead of time of the price going forward. There's one issue on one day where Vince Cable says, I had no idea what the price was going to be. Let me say, without equivocation, he's lying. He's lying.
Okay, so let's go and actually look at the people that they chose to sell shares, what those people were saying. Not only Lazard, we're going to go back to them in the second half. So we're going to look at RBC Bank, and we're going to look at Barclays and what they were telling clients. They were handling shares for the government. They were selling shares to investors. One of the members of the banking syndicate was RBC. Their equity analyst colleagues advised many of the same clients that Royal Mail shares were worth a far higher price, up to a 55% premium on its 330p float price. So that's what RBC were telling their clients. Now let's look at Barclays, owned by the taxpayer, by the way. Barclays analysts described Royal Mail as cash generative, benefiting from reduced regulatory constraints and a much improved balance sheet, thanks in large part to the taxpayer picking up the bulk of the Royal Mail's pension liability. So Barclays said because the taxpayer slump is picking up the pension liabilities, the share price will jump, they said, 27%, at least over what the float price was.
You know what really disgusts me about all this is not only did the Cable's office essentially misrepresent the situation, but they blamed an industrial action, the workers at Royal Mail who were out on strike, as reason why there was uncertainty about the value of these shares. So once again, showing contempt for the people. It would be like saying to Vince Cable, okay, we want you to take that hill to save Britain from an invading army. And Vince Cable says, but I've got a hangnail. I can't go over the hill. There's an industrial action. Somebody has a placard in the street. So I'm going to pee away £1 billion. This guy, he makes Cameron look almost acceptable. I mean, he's the biggest. I mean, what a jack. Fill in the rest of the. Oh my God, what an idiot. Okay, we got to go, Stacey. Thanks.
I'll see you in the second half.
Stay.
We had some glitches on that show, but that was not here at the bunker. That was the transmission. But anyhow, the main thing about this is here's a 500-year, nearly a 500-year-old installation of the British Post Office. And they're privatizing it off, and the guys are making a fortune manipulating the stock. Now, we got the same situation going in this country. They want to privatize the post office, you know, and a lot of, and the conservative right-wingers, oh, yeah, that's wonderful. Give it to FedEx and UPS because they could do it so much faster. Well, one of the reasons they can do it allegedly faster is because they've got more white people on their payroll, and they have more stringent rules that, and they work their asses off. I talked to a young gal that signed on to, I think it was UPS or FedEx, one of the two, for a while, and said she couldn't keep up with it. They work really hard, and see what happened with the post office is the post office became the dumping ground for all the crap. It became a black swimming hole. All your big cities, post offices are almost all black. And wherever they can push a Mexican in or a black in, they do. And so obviously the post office service suffers from that. Nobody can say anything. Nobody can that's in the post office surely can say anything because they'd be fired immediately for daring to point out the facts that these blacks are not that good at what they're supposed to do. So they're going to be pushing that, and your right-wing conservatives are going to be right behind it. And let's privatize the post office. Oh, well, FedEx and all these big corporations, you know, they act like they're privatizing them into small competitive little companies. These are massive companies, worldwide companies, And then once they get control of it, you're going to be at the mercy of these private corporations. where you had at least some control when it was the U.S. government, you know. So anyhow, don't let them talk you into this privatizing of the post office. When they point out how the service has dropped over the years, say, well, that's in direct proportion to the amount of Negroes that you shoved into these jobs. I've known in California at our local P.O. box out there, they shoved some Negroes into that post office, and they weren't worth a damn. And so then they say, oh, the post office is terrible. Well, of course it's terrible when you are forced to put people in a job that they're not qualified to do and not disposed to work that hard. Well, I see we have a mulatto congressman, 11-term congressman, who's in trouble. Now, this guy is, I mean, he's got a lot of white blood in him, but he's obviously an octoroon. 11-term congressman Benny Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi, is not backing down from a radio interview in which he calls Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and Uncle Tom. Well, of course, Clarence Thomas and Uncle Tom, totally unqualified, married to a white bitch, and he is an Uncle Tom. He's got his nose so far up, I think it's Alito's ass, that other Supreme Court justice, the more right-wing conservative type, that they say that when Alito goes to the bathroom, he has to be careful that the Uncle Tom, Clarence Thomas, doesn't, if he stops quick, Clarence Thomas' nose will be in his ass. In a subsequent interview with CNN, Thompson told Dana Bash, if you look at Thompson's decisions on the court, they've been adverse to the minority community. And the people I represent have a real issue with an African-American not being sensible to those issues. Well, I could say, Bernie Thompson, you actually got more white blood. You look like you got more white blood than black blood. I don't know what race you think you're in. And of course these guys, once they get white whore to marry them and like that and get some power and money, they're going to go along with the ruling class. Jeez, what do you expect? That's been going on for a long time. Even Birth of a Nation, they showed something about that. Thompson made his original comment Sunday on a New Nation of Islam radio show. Well, see, there you can be racist as hell on the New Nation of Islam radio show. Even the show's host appeared taken aback by Thompson's use of the phrase, shaking his head and saying, quote, oh brother, you said that, I didn't, unquote. Well, what's the matter with saying Uncle Tom? I mean, you know, there's plenty of black Uncle Toms, and especially the ones that join up with the Republican Party. They're the funniest of them all. Now these white conservative Christians kiss their ass. I mean, I remember when we had meetings where once in a while they'd have a black speaker come in, and they treated him like he was royalty. Oh my God, we got a black man on our side. It was sickening to watch these white middle class conservative right wing Christians huddle around. We got one now. He's on our side. Later on, Thompson elaborated on his reasons for labeling Thomas this way. Quote, when I look at the decision he's been a part of on that court, it's almost to the point to say this man doesn't even like black people. He doesn't like being black, Thompson said, because every decision where color has something to do with, he went against it. Well, yeah, he's got his nose right up the ass of these other guys, the Jews and so forth on the Supreme Court. And, of course, Bernie Thompson, I don't see how you can scream too much about blackness, because you're certainly a long way from being black like Andrew H. Brown on Amos and Andy, that's for sure. Well, let's see here. What's next? can't get this. Oh, there we go. By the way, I wonder what Farrakhan's thinking about this new breakoff, or I guess it's a breakoff of the new Black Panther, or the new Nation of Islam. I see them here in their, all their regalia and everything. They're wearing the uniforms and they got, the founder of the Nation of Islam pictures all around them and everything. And I'm not sure. It sounds to me like they're going into competition with the band, with the man, with all the houses and all the cars and, all the money and all these, slaves he's got. You know, Farrakhan talks about slavery all the time. He's got the biggest plantation in the country. He's got thousands and thousands of black people like slaves. They're mental slaves into this sort of a partly Islam, partly Christian, partly this, partly that. At one time, I had a certain amount of respect for Farrakhan, but I think he's a total con man now. And even worse, I think he works part-time for the CIA to make sure that none of his folk get too far out of line, man. Whenever you find some kind of leader, no matter what color he is, traveling around the world all the time, meeting with leaders and people, political leaders in other countries, in many cases, they're double agents, I mean, or they're agents that are working either for the FBI or the CIA, or they've got something on them and they got them digging out information as they travel around. Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to have to be a little cynical about that whole thing. Well, Thomas wasn't the only target of Thompson's ire on the radio show. Thompson also accused Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of making a racist comment. Oh, he wouldn't. Now, if that's not a racist statement, I don't know what is, and says that opposition to President Obama is all about race. Now all of a sudden government is the worst thing in the world since a black man became president. Well, that's true, especially with the Republicans, because they try to hide it all the time. That's what's so funny. The racists, but they're ruling class racist, not like us. No, there's a difference. The ruling class and capitalist racist are much different than biological racists and so forth like we are, or like I am. I can't speak for all you people. Earlier this year, Thomas made some headline-grabbing comments of his own, telling a group of students that Americans are overly sensitive about race. He's playing the old Uncle Tom card. Hell, I want people to be sensitive about race. I want them to be over-sensitive about race. I want to see them fighting mad about race. Yeah, then we get the passion going. Got to have the passion. Now this racial mongrel Bobby Jindal down in Louisiana, some kind of a half-breed, cross-breed Middle Easterner, I think. After comparing U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder to former Alabama Governor George Wallace, a segregationist, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal is getting a history lesson courtesy of Holder's staff. Department of Justice employees mailed a copy of civil rights leader and Georgia Congressman John Lewis' book, Walking with the Wind, a memoir of the movement, to Jindal on Friday. One day after the Republican governor said Holder was standing in the schoolhouse door of charter schools. A yellow sticky note with the worth a read written on it is attached to page 199, where Lewis shares the story of Vivian Malone, one of the black students who integrated the University of Alabama, and Holder's late sister-in-law. Well, that makes Holder okay. I love it when half-breeds, quarter-breeds, mulattoes all start fighting among themselves. See, that's what happened in Egypt. Up until, I think it was the 25th dynasty, it was all white, and then the whites were squabbling so much. A black general brought his armies into the government there of Egypt and took over. And then the mongrelization started, and that was the end of the white people pretty much in Egypt. So maybe we can get these mulattoes and half-breeds fighting among themselves so much that a white general can come marching in. I think I told you before about how this town of Warsaw, Indiana, is getting more blacks, more Indians and Pakis, and more Asians, blacks. Well, it's the corporations. We got three or four big corporations here. We got a lot of little corporations, but it's the big corporations that these non-white pressure groups like Jesse Jackson and so forth, they go beating on their door and scare the hell out of them, and so all they care about is profits anyhow, so they hire these people. And they hire the Pakis and the Indians over here just because they can get them cheap, and they can get them educated over there and bring them over here. And once they're in these companies, then they move into your small white town and start boring into the woodwork. And the same way with city government and the schools. The pressure groups will come down, and the big pressure comes from white race mixers in power. And they beat on the doors of the local school board and all that kind of stuff. Now they came out just the other day and said, now that the schools are half non-white, I hope you saw this, because I told people way back in the 70s, I said, first they'll get the numbers in here, then they'll want you to be able to speak Spanish, and one thing will lead to another, and then they'll have to have Spanish-speaking teachers, and that'll rule out a lot of white teachers, and gradually, and so now what they're saying is, since now schools are half non-white, we got to have many more people who represent those people. In other words, we're going to have to jam more and more non-white, Spanish-speaking, Swahili-speaking, Indian-speaking, Paki-speaking teachers in. So now they took over the students and cram those people down your throat. Now they're going to come back and cram the teachers. And so if you're one of these liberal teachers, you got it coming. I don't have any sympathy for most of the teachers. Now, a lot of them had to bite their tongue, keep their mouth shut, and I can understand that. But still, that's the whole idea of just not doing your duty to your race, and ends up you're going to pay for it. So all these white teachers and all these young white students that go to college to become teachers, forget it. They're going to be bringing in more and more people not of your race, and more people from outside the country. How long do you think American history is going to last as this thing goes on? They're going to be watering down your history, everything else, and pretty soon it won't be your history at all. It'll be the history of Pakistan and India. It'll be the history of Mexico and all that, and the history of Central America. And forget your history. You wait and see. It all works that way. It works that way. I remember all the people when I prophesied and predicted, which was didn't take a crystal ball. Oh, that'll never happen, a lot of them. That'll never happen. Boy, some of those people come back to me today and say, whoa, boy, we should have listened to you way back then. Well, you listened to me, but you didn't have any guts. Well, here's a story that'll make you sob, sob, sob. Ireland has witnessed an alarming increase in hate crimes. In other words, pro-white crimes, pro-white action, involving physical and verbal abuse over a person's race or religion. Well, it's diversity that causes it. The diversity movement amplifies racism, you idiots. When people are the same demographics and race in an area, and preponderance of the people are white, you're not going to have racism. But when you dump a bunch of non-whites into a white pot, of course you're going to have racism, because racism is natural. It's not unnatural. It is now feared that such racist incidents are occurring at a rate 3 to 4 times greater than indicated by official police statistics. The Irish Integration Center said, new studies have shown people are 22 times more likely to report racist incidents in England and Wales than in Ireland. Whoa. Let's see here. Underreporting of such incidents is a worrying problem in Ireland. It is pretty obvious that racism isn't 22 times greater in England or Wales than here, Public Affairs Director Helena Clark said. Of course, you know what's behind most of this is the corporations that move people around like they're pieces of crap in a barnyard, you know, just to get cheap labor, whatever they want. They don't give a shit about demographics or the culture or anything of anybody. The number of logged hate crimes is now increasing in Ireland by between 12% and 15% each year, with a dramatic spike since 2010-2011. Well, they don't show exactly what they mean by a hate crime. You know, some people say if you snub somebody or give them the finger, that's a hate crime. Such hate crimes have been put under the spotlight following a spate of high-profile incidents, including Justice Minister Alan Shatter being the victim of anti-Jewish abuse. Well, what does that mean? That could mean anything from breaking his nose to just saying, I don't like Jews, and especially you, Alan. Two Chinese women being assaulted in Dublin. Is that a verbal assault or is it an actual assault? Were they really hurt? You see, they don't tell you that. A Negro migrant being subjected to a vile racist tirade on a bus. In other words, some white person's fed up and uncorked and told this nigger migrant on the bus what they thought of him. That's a hate crime. And foreign food delivery workers in Dublin being targeted for ambush-style attacks. That's interesting. Maybe they just wanted to steal the hamburgers off the truck. Leading civil rights groups, including the 2C, the Irish Immigrant Council, an immigrant support group, admitted that there is now mounting concern over the rise of such hate crimes. You know, when I think of a crime, I think of somebody beating the shit out of somebody, or blackmailing them, or nailing them to a wall, or something. Telling somebody off, to me, that's ridiculous. It's a hate crime. New reporting service has logged almost four times more race-related incidents than official police statistics for the same period. The hotline dealt with 60 specific attacks. You know, keyword attacks. What do you mean attacks? Nationwide over a three-month period. They really have to stretch and strain hard to find these, too, you know. However, police figures indicate that just 19 incidents took place over the same period. Now, there's the cops up to their neck in guiding and ruling white people and what they think and what they say on the street and so forth. So these are thought police. These are out-and-out thought police. No doubt about it. Here they still have a little argument that a lot of cops don't want to get involved with a racial discussion. But over there, every cop in England, every cop in Ireland, every cop in Germany is also a thought police on the race issue. So it'll be here too. And it's going to be worse because they're going to put all these Iraqi veterans and all these Afghan veterans that have been trained to just kick doors in and kick the shit out of people and kill them and everything else. They're going to make cops out of them, and watch out. Watch out. Well, boys and girls, that's about it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Thursday, and we'll do it again. We'll see what we can do to offend people. And why don't you tape this show on a cassette tape and hand it to somebody you don't like? Upset their whole day, upset their whole month. They're slipping under the door of some outfit that you know is going to cause them apoplexy to hear the voice of Terrible Tommy saying, nigger. It even upsets people who are into the worried about the white race. Yeah, there's a lot of these guys run these programs. Oh my goodness! No. We can't say nigger because that. Well, we don't want to offend the black people, even though we want to separate from them, get rid of them, get them out of here, get them back to Africa, whatever. But we don't want to offend them because we're racialists. We're not racist. We're racialists. No, we're white nationalists. 14:5 and shut up.
It's a big job just getting by with 9 kids and a wife. But I've been working, man, dang near all my life, and I'll keep on working. Long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working man blues. I'll keep my nose on the grindstone, work hard every day. I might get a little tired on the weekend. After I draw my pay, I'll go back working. Come Monday morning, I'm right back with the crew. I drank a little beer that evening, sang a little bit of these working man blues. Sometime I think about leaving, do a little bumming around. I want to throw my bills out the window, catch a train to another town. I'll go back working. Gotta buy my kids a brand new pair of shoes. I drank a little beer in a tavern, cry a little bit of these working man blues. Here comes that working man. Me. I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working, long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working man blues. This song for the working man.
Well, folks, I haven't heard any reports back, but
in the middle of that outlaw country to close out there. Working man blues.